The awareness of sorcerers grows when they do dreaming. And the moment it grows, something out there acknowledges its growth, recognizes it, and makes a bid for it. The inorganic beings are the bidders for that new, enhanced awareness. Dreamers have to be forever on their toes. They are prey the moment they venture out in that predatorial universe. To be safe, you must be on your toes every second. Don't let anything or anybody decide for you. That is to say, go to the inorganic beings world only when you want to go. Once you isolate a scout, a tremendous pull will be exerted on you to go to the inorganic beings world. You can consciously stop that pull of the scouts. Always remember, you can change the course of your dreaming by intending that course. With practice, your capacity to intend journeys into the inorganic beings realm will become extraordinarily keen. An increased capacity to intend brings forth an increased control over your dreaming attention. This additional control makes one more daring. Such confidence is very scary because it is confidence of a fool. To be transported bodily is possible. We are energy that is kept in a specific shape and position by the fixation of the assemblage point on one location. If that location is changed, the shape and position of that energy will change accordingly. All the inorganic beings have to do is place our assemblage point on the right location, and off we go, like a bullet, shoes, hat, and all. It is absurd to trust the inorganic beings. They have their own rhythm, and it isn't human. Sorcerers' maneuvers are deadly. I beseech you to be extraordinarily aware. Don't get involved in having some idiotic confidence in yourself. One must seriously consider that the inorganic beings have astounding means at their disposal. Their awareness is superb. In comparison, we are children, children with a lot of energy, which the inorganic beings covet. You already understand that the gates of dreaming are specific obstacles, but you haven't understood yet that whatever is given as the exercise to reach and cross a gate is not really what the gate is all about. I mean that it's not true to say, for example, that the second gate is reached and crossed when a dreamer learns to wake up in another dream, or when a dreamer learns to change dreams without waking up in the world of daily life. The second gate of dreaming is reached and crossed only when a dreamer learns to isolate and follow the foreign energy scouts. Waking up in another dream or changing dreams is the drill devised by the old sorcerers to exercise a dreamer's capacity to isolate and follow a scout. Following a scout is a high accomplishment, and when dreamers are able to perform it, the second gate is flung open and the universe that exists behind it becomes accessible to them. This universe is there all the time, but we cannot go into it because we lack energetic prowess, and in essence, the second gate of dreaming is the door into the inorganic being's world, and dreaming is the key that opens that door. The rule of the second gate can be described in terms of a series of three steps. One, through practicing the drill of changing dreams, dreamers find out about the scouts. Two, by following the scouts, they enter into another veritable universe. And three, in that universe, by means of their actions, dreamers find out on their own the governing laws and regulations of that universe. The unavoidable reaction on the part of the inorganic beings is the attempt to keep the dreamer in their world. The inorganic beings don't let anyone go, not without a real fight. You have to continue your dreaming until you have gone through the universe behind the second gate. I mean that you alone must either accept or reject the lure of the inorganic beings. I was forced to teach you dreaming only because that is the pattern set out by the old sorcerers. The path of dreaming is filled with pitfalls, and to avoid those pitfalls or to fall into them is the personal and individual affair of each dreamer. And I may add that it is a final affair. Those pitfalls are the result of succumbing to adulation or to promises of power. And not only succumbing to those, but succumbing to anything offered by the inorganic beings. There is no way for sorcerers to accept anything offered by them beyond a certain point. That point depends on us as individuals. The challenge is for each of us to take only what is needed from that world, nothing more. To know what's needed is the virtuosity of sorcerers. But to take only what's needed is their highest accomplishment. To fail to understand this simple rule is the surest way of plummeting into a pitfall. If you fall, you pay the price, and the price depends on the circumstances and the depth of the fall. But there is really no way of talking about an eventuality of this sort, because we are not facing a problem of punishment. energetic currents are at stake here, energetic currents which create circumstances that are more dreadful than death. Everything in the sorcerer's path is a matter of life or death, but in the path of dreaming, this matter is enhanced 100-fold. You may come to think you are extremely disciplined and conscientious with your dreaming practices. That's the time for you to be even more disciplined and handle everything related to dreaming with kid gloves. Be above all vigilant. One can't foretell where the attack will come from. The universe behind the second gate is the closest to our own, and our own universe is pretty crafty and heartless, so the two can't be that different. The universe of the inorganic beings is always ready to strike, but so is our own universe. That's why you have to go into their realm exactly as if you were venturing into a war zone. I don't mean that dreamers always have to be afraid of that world. Once a dreamer goes through the universe behind the second gate, or once a dreamer refuses to consider it as a viable option, there are no more headaches. Only then are dreamers free to continue. The universe behind the second gate is so powerful and engaging that it serves as a natural screen or a testing ground where dreamers are probed for their weaknesses. If they survive the test, they can proceed to the next gate. If they do not, they remain forever trapped in that universe. For dreamers, their feelings alone can stop their dreaming. Once they have formulated the thought of re-entering dreaming, their practices will continue as if they had never been interrupted. If dreaming is overemphasized, it becomes what it was for the old sorcerers, a source of inexhaustible indulging. You must exercise all the care you are able to muster up. The old sorcerer's flaw was that they took to the inorganic beings' realm like fish take to water. When dreamers realize that the inorganic beings have no appeal, it is usually too late for them, because by then the inorganic beings have them in the bag. The inorganic beings are like fishermen. They attract and catch awareness. You're suffering from anxiety, you say? That means nothing. Gain back your energy and don't worry about nonsense. The inorganic beings are forever in search of awareness and energy. The inorganic beings cannot lie. The third gate of dreaming is reached when you find yourself in a dream, staring at someone else who is asleep, and that someone else turns out to be you. There are two phases to each of the gates of dreaming. The first is to arrive at the gate. The second is to cross it. By dreaming that you see yourself asleep, you arrive at the third gate. The second phase is to move around once you've seen yourself asleep. At the third gate of dreaming, you begin to deliberately merge your dreaming reality with the reality of the daily world. This is the drill, and sorcerers call it completing the energy body. The merge between the two realities has to be so thorough that you need to be more fluid than ever. Examine everything at the third gate with great care and curiosity. Our tendency at the third gate is to get lost in detail. To view things with great care and curiosity means to resist the nearly irresistible temptation to plunge into detail. The given drill at the third gate is to consolidate the energy body. Dreamers begin forging the energy body by fulfilling the drills of the first and second gates. When they reach the third gate, the energy body is all ready to come out, or perhaps it would be better to say that it is ready to act. Unfortunately, this also means that it's ready to be mesmerized by detail. The energy body is like a child who's been imprisoned all its life. The moment it is free, it soaks up everything it can find, and I mean everything. Every irrelevant, minute detail totally absorbs the energy body. The most asinine detail becomes a world for the energy body. The effort that dreamers have to make to direct the energy body is staggering. I know that it sounds awkward to tell you to view things with care and curiosity, but that is the best way to describe what you should do. At the third gate, dreamers have to avoid a nearly irresistible impulse to plunge into everything, and they avoid it by being so curious, so desperate to get into everything, that they don't let any particular thing imprison them. My recommendations, which I know sound absurd to the mind, are directly aimed at your energy body. Your energy body has to unite all its resources in order to act. Your entire energy body has to be engaged to perform the drill of the third gate. Therefore, to make things easier for your energy body, you must hold back your rationality. At the third gate, rationality is responsible for the insistence of our energy bodies on being obsessed with superfluous detail. At the third gate, then, we need irrational fluidity, irrational abandon to counteract that insistence. The position of the assemblage point is like a vault where sorcerers keep their records. Sorcerers are capable of leaving accurate records of their findings in the position of the assemblage point. When it comes to getting to the essence of a written account, we have to use our sense of sympathetic or imaginative participation to go beyond the mere page into the experience itself. However, in the sorcerer's world, since there are no written pages, total records which can be relived instead of read are left in the position of the assemblage point. With the inorganic beings, once you get to play with them, you're hooked. They'll always be after you, or what's worse yet, you'll always be after them. To be ready for a true merging of your dreaming reality and your daily reality, you must recapitulate your life further. The recapitulation of our lives never ends, no matter how well we've done it once. The reason average people lack volition in their dreams is that they have never recapitulated, and their lives are filled to capacity with heavily loaded emotions like memories, hopes, fears, etc., etc. Sorcerers, on the contrary, are relatively free from heavy binding emotions because of their recapitulation. And if something stops them, the assumption is that there still is something in them that is not quite clear. Recapitulating and dreaming go hand in hand. If we regurgitate our lives, we get more and more airborne. The recapitulation consists of reliving the totality of one's life experiences by remembering every possible minute detail of them. It's the essential factor in a dreamer's redefinition and redeployment of energy. The recapitulation sets free energy imprisoned within us, and without this liberated energy, dreaming is not possible. Make a list of all the people you have met in your life, starting at the present. Arrange your list in an orderly fashion, breaking it down into areas of activity, such as jobs you have had, schools you have attended. Then go without deviation from the first person on your list to the last one, reliving every one of your interactions with them. Recapitulating an event starts with one's mind, arranging everything pertinent to what is being recapitulated. Arranging means reconstructing the event piece by piece, starting by recollecting the physical details of the surroundings, then going to the person with whom one shared the interaction, and then going to oneself, to the examination of one's feelings. The recapitulation is coupled with a natural rhythmical breathing. Long exhalations are performed as the head moves gently and slowly from right to left, and long inhalations are taken as the head moves back from left to right. This act of moving the head from side to side is called fanning the event. The mind examines the event from beginning to end while the body fans on and on everything the mind focuses on. The sorcerers of antiquity, the inventors of the recapitulation, viewed breathing as a magical, life-giving act and used it accordingly as a magical vehicle. The exhalation, to eject the foreign energy left in them during the interaction being recapitulated, and the inhalation to pull back the energy that they themselves left behind during the interaction. It's more involved than an intellectual psychoanalysis. The recapitulation is a sorcerer's ploy to induce a minute but steady displacement of the assemblage point. The assemblage point, under the impact of reviewing past actions and feelings, goes back and forth between its present site and the site it occupied when the event being recapitulated took place. The old sorcerer's rationale behind the recapitulation was their conviction that there is an inconceivable dissolving force in the universe which makes organisms live by lending them awareness. That force also makes organisms die in order to extract the same lent awareness which organisms have enhanced through their life experiences. The old sorcerers believed that since it is our life experience this force is after, it is of supreme importance that it can be satisfied with a facsimile of our life experience, the recapitulation. Having had what it seeks, the dissolving force then lets sorcerers go, free to expand their capacity to perceive and reach with it the confines of time and space. Dreaming requires every bit of our available energy. If there is a deep preoccupation in our life, there is no possibility of dreaming. If you think you are deeply preoccupied and your practices are not interrupted, it would be that you are only egomaniacally disturbed. To be preoccupied for sorcerers means that all your energy sources are taken on. There is a second round of the recapitulation. it consists of a new recapitulation pattern. Construct a jigsaw puzzle by recapitulating, without any apparent order, different events of your life. It'll be a mess if you let your pettiness choose the events you're going to recapitulate. Instead, let the spirit decide. Be silent. And then get to the event the spirit points out. There are two basic rounds to the recapitulation. The first is called formality and rigidity, and the second, fluidity. When dreaming you are seeing your body, you have to establish some valid guide to find out whether you are actually seeing your body asleep in your bed. Remember, you must be in your actual room seeing your actual body. Otherwise, what you are having is merely a dream. If that's the case, control that dream, either by observing its detail or by changing it. Figure out a way to validate the fact that you are looking at yourself. Use your own judgment. Dreamers have to be imaginative to move their energy bodies. Sorcerers say that at the third gate, the entire energy body can move like energy moves, fast and directly. Their energy bodies know exactly how to move. They can move as they move in the inorganic being's world. When your energy body learns to move by itself, you'll be thoroughly out of the inorganic being's reach. Be impeccable. I have told you this dozens of times. To be impeccable means to put your life on the line in order to back up your decisions, and then to do quite a lot more than your best to realize those decisions. When you're not deciding anything, you're merely playing roulette with your life in a helter-skelter way. Instead of struggling to walk in dreaming, one wills oneself to move. It takes sorcerers forever to learn to move the energy body with their own volition. Once you've learned how to move your energy body by yourself, you should continue moving. Moving your energy body opens up a new area of extraordinary exploration. Again, one must come up with an idea to validate the faithfulness of one's dreams. To be transported by a scout is the real dreaming task of the second gate. It is a very serious matter, but not as serious as forging and moving the energy body. Therefore, when the time comes, you have to make sure, by some means of your own, whether you are actually seeing yourself asleep or whether you are merely dreaming that you're seeing yourself asleep. One's new extraordinary exploration hinges on really seeing oneself asleep. Dreamers take a very long time to perfect their energy bodies, and this is exactly what's at stake here, perfecting your energy body. The reason the energy body is compelled to examine detail and get inextricably stuck in it is its inexperience, its incompleteness. Sorcerers spend a lifetime consolidating the energy body by letting it sponge up everything possible. Until the energy body is complete and mature, it is self-absorbed. It can't get free from the compulsion to be absorbed by everything. But if one takes this into consideration, instead of fighting the energy body, one can lend it a hand by directing its behavior, that is to say, by stalking it. Since everything related to the energy body depends on the appropriate position of the assemblage point, and since dreaming is nothing else but the means to displace it, stalking is, consequently, a way to make the assemblage point stay put on the perfect position, in this case, the position where the energy body can become consolidated and from which it can finally emerge. The moment the energy body can move on its own, sorcerers assume that the optimum position of the assemblage point has been reached. The next step is to stalk it, that is, to fixate it on that position in order to complete the energy body. This procedure is simplicity itself. One intends to stalk it. Let your energy body intend to reach the optimum dreaming position. Then let your energy body intend to stay at that position, and you will be stalking. Intending is the secret. Sorcerers displace their assemblage points through intending and fixate them equally through intending. And there is no technique for intending. One intends through usage. The ideal spot and the fixation of the assemblage point are metaphors. They have nothing to do with the words used to describe them. What comes next is a sorcerer's gem, the real task, seeing energy in your dreaming with your energy body. Dreamers have a rule of thumb. If their energy body is complete, they see energy every time they gaze at an item in the daily world. In dreams, if they see the energy of an item, they know they are dealing with a real world, no matter how distorted that world may appear to their dreaming attention. If they can't see the energy of an item, they are in an ordinary dream and not in a real world. What is a real world? A world that generates energy. The opposite of a phantom world of projections where nothing generates energy, like most of your dreams, where nothing has an energetic effect. Another definition of dreaming is a process by which dreamers isolate dream conditions in which they can find energy-generating elements. Dreaming is the process by which we intend to find adequate positions of the assemblage point, positions that permit us to perceive energy-generating items in dream-like states. The energy body is also capable of perceiving energy that is quite different from the energy of our own world, as in the case of items of the inorganic beings realm, which the energy body perceives as sizzling energy. In our world, nothing sizzles. Everything here wavers. From a certain point, the issue of your dreaming will be to determine whether the items on which you focus your dreaming attention are energy-generating, mere phantom projections, or generators of foreign energy. Seeing energy is the gauge to determine whether or not you are observing your real body asleep. In order to see in dreaming, not only do you have to intend seeing, but you have to put your intent into words. You have to speak up. There are other means to accomplish the same result, but voicing one's intent is one of the simplest and most direct ways. You need to have patience. You are learning to do something extraordinary. You are learning to intend to see in your dreams. Someday, you will not have to voice your intent. You will simply will it silently. If nothing happens when you voice your intent to see, it means that your dream is an ordinary dream. Phantom projections, images that have life only in your dreaming attention. Don't give up or get discouraged. Keep on trying. Sooner or later, you'll hit the right note. The drill for the third gate of dreaming is to make the energy body move on its own. In special dreams, our dreaming attention focuses on the daily world, and it moves instantly from one real object to another in the world. What makes this movement possible is that the assemblage point is on the proper dreaming position. From that position, the assemblage point gives the dreaming attention such fluidity that it can move in a split second over incredible distances, and in doing so, it produces a perception so fast, so fleeting, that it resembles an ordinary dream. When your dreaming body is complete and functioning, the implication that you see energy in your dream is that you are perceiving a real world through the veil of a dream. Unless we see in dreaming, we can't tell a real energy-generating thing from a phantom projection. The world is like an onion. It has many skins. The world we know is but one of them. Sometimes we cross boundaries and enter into another skin, another world, very much like this one, but not the same. In the view of sorcerers, the universe is constructed in layers, which the energy body can cross. Do you know where the old sorcerers are still existing to this day? In another layer, in another skin of the onion. The idea of a real pragmatic journey taken in dreams is very difficult to understand or to accept. The journey of the energy body depends exclusively on the position of the assemblage point. Our problem is our cynicism. Cynicism doesn't allow us to make drastic changes in our understanding of the world. It also forces us to feel that we are always right. I propose that you do one nonsensical thing that might turn the tide. Repeat to yourself incessantly that the hinge of sorcery is the mystery of the assemblage point. If you repeat this to yourself long enough, some unseen force takes over and makes the appropriate changes in you. Cut your cynical attitude. Repeat this in a bona fide manner. The mystery of the assemblage point is everything in sorcery, or rather, everything in sorcery rests on the manipulation of the assemblage point. You may know all this, but you have to repeat it. There is an enormous difference between the thoughts and deeds of the men of antiquity and those of modern men. The men of ancient times had a very realistic view of perception and awareness. because their view stemmed from their observations of the universe around them. Modern men, in contrast, have an absurdly unrealistic view of perception and awareness because their view stems from their observations of the social order and from their dealings with it. You are a modern man involved with the views and observations of men of antiquity, and none of those views and observations are familiar to you. Now, more than ever, you need sobriety and aplomb. I'm trying to make a solid bridge, a bridge you can walk on between the views of men of ancient times and those of modern men. Of all the transcendental observations of the men of ancient times, the only one with which you are familiar, because it is filtered down to our day, is the idea of selling our souls to the devil in exchange for immortality, which sounds to me like something coming straight out of the relationship of the old sorcerers with the inorganic beings. Succumbing to the lure of the inorganic beings is not just an idea, it's real. Dreaming likewise is real. It is an energy-generating condition. You hear my statements, and you may understand what I mean, but your awareness hasn't caught up with the total implication of it yet. When you are fully aware of what an energy-generating condition means, you will measure dreaming with the greatest care and deliberation. When you believe you are just dreaming, you take blind chances. Faulty reasoning tells you that no matter what happens at a given moment, the dream will be over and you will wake up. I'm talking to you about the views of men of antiquity and the views of modern men because your awareness, which is the awareness of modern men, prefers to deal with an unfamiliar concept as if it were an empty ideality. If I left it up to you, you'd regard dreaming as an idea. Of course, I'm sure you take dreaming seriously, but you don't quite believe in the reality of dreaming. I'm saying all this because the time will come when you are in the proper position to understand that dreaming is an energy-generating condition. Then you will understand that ordinary dreams are the honing devices used to train the assemblage point to reach the position that creates this energy-generating condition we call dreaming. Since dreamers touch and enter real worlds of all-inclusive effects, they ought to be in a permanent state of the most intense and sustained alertness. Any deviation from total alertness imperils the dreamer in ways more than dreadful. Regard dreaming as something extremely dangerous, and begin that now. When you can displace your assemblage point quickly and easily, that ease can have the tendency to make the displacement erratic. Then you must bring that ease to order, and don't allow yourself even a fraction of an inch leeway. Faithfully and daily repeat what I asked you to repeat, that everything in sorcery rests on the manipulation of the assemblage point. The results of your litany-like invocation will be incredible. It has the same effect on one's awareness that exercise has on the muscles of the body. Your assemblage point becomes more agile, which means that seeing energy and dreaming becomes the sole goal of your practices. A moment then comes when you're able just to intend seeing without saying a word and actually experience the same result as when you voice out loud your intent to see. The energy of our world wavers. It scintillates. Not only living beings, but everything in our world glimmers with an inner light of its own. The energy of our world consists of layers of shimmering hues. The top layer is whitish. Another, immediately adjacent to it, is chartreuse, and another one, more distant yet, is amber. You will see glimmers of them whenever items that you encounter in your dreamlike states change shapes. However, a whitish glow is always the initial impact of seeing anything that generates energy. There is an endless number of different hues, but for the purposes of a beginning order, you should be concerned with those three. Later on, you can get as sophisticated as you want and isolate dozens of hues, if you're able to do it. The whitish layer is the hue of the present position of mankind's assemblage point. Let's say that it is a modern hue. Sorcerers believe that everything man does nowadays is tinted with that whitish glow. At another time, more distant yet, it made it amber. The color of sorcerer's energy is amber, which means that they are energetically associated with the men who existed in the distant past. The present whitish hue may change someday if man is capable of evolving. The grand task of sorcerers is to bring forth the idea that, In order to evolve, man must first free his awareness from its bindings to the social order. Once awareness is free, intent will redirect it into a new evolutionary path. Sorcerers have succeeded in that task. They themselves are the proof. To convince others of the value and import of evolving is another matter. The other kind of energy present in our day, in our world, but alien to it, is the scout's energy, the energy that sizzles. Bear in mind that not every scout you're going to find belongs to the realm of the inorganic beings. Some of the scouts you will encounter are going to be not from the inorganic beings realm, but from other, even more distant levels of awareness. Since scouts are aware of themselves, they make contact with us when we are awake. But our great misfortune is to have our consciousness so fully engaged that we don't have time to pay attention. In our sleep, however, the two-way traffic trap door opens. We dream. And in our dreams, we make contact. The way to tell whether the scouts are from a level besides the inorganic being's world is, the greater their sizzling, the further they come from. This sounds simplistic, but you have to let your energy body tell you what's what. I assure you, it'll make very fine distinctions and unerring judgments when faced with alien energy. Unless you know exactly what you are doing and what you want out of alien energy, you have to be content with a brief glance. Anything beyond a glance is as dangerous and as stupid as petting a rattlesnake. Scouts are always very aggressive and extremely daring. They have to be that way in order to prevail in their explorations. Sustaining our dreaming attention on them is tantamount to soliciting their awareness to focus on us. Once they focus their attention on us, we are compelled to go with them. And that, of course, is the danger. We may end up in worlds beyond our energetic possibilities. There are many types of scouts, but at a beginning level of energy, one can only focus on three. The first two types are the easiest to spot. Their disguises in our dreams are so outlandish that they immediately attract our dreaming attention. The scouts of the third type are the most dangerous in terms of aggressiveness and power, and because they hide behind subtle disguises. One of the strangest things dreamers find out, which you yourself will find, is this third type of scout. The most ferocious scout hides behind people in our dreams. It's annoying that they are always associated with the dream images of our parents or close friends. Perhaps that's why we often feel ill at ease when we dream of them. A rule of thumb for dreamers is to assume that the third type of scout is present whenever they feel perturbed by their parents or friends in a dream. Sound advice is to avoid those dream images. They are sheer poison. Blue energy doesn't sizzle. It is like ours, it wavers, but it is blue instead of white. Blue energy doesn't exist in a natural state in our world. The deadly scouts of the third type are bright orange. The inorganic beings only show themselves at the beginning. After their scouts take us to their world, there is no necessity for the inorganic beings' projections. If we want to see the inorganic beings, a scout takes us there. For no one, and I mean no one, can journey by himself to their realm. Their world is sealed. No one can enter or leave without the consent of the inorganic beings. The only thing you can do by yourself once you're inside is, of course, voice your intent to stay. To say it out loud means to set in motion currents of energy that are irreversible. In olden times, words were incredibly powerful. Now they are not. In the inorganic beings' realm, they haven't lost their power. There is one last issue relating to that world that we haven't discussed. In the final analysis, my aversion to the old sorcerer's activities is very personal. As a Nahual, I detest what they did. They cowardly sought refuge in the inorganic beings' world. They argued that in a predatorial universe poised to rip us apart, the only possible haven for us is in that realm. They believed that because it's true. Since the inorganic beings can't lie, the sales pitch of the dreaming emissary is all true. That world can give us shelter and prolong our awareness for nearly an eternity. When the emissary's sales pitch, even if it's the truth, has no appeal to you, and you are ready to chance a road that might rip you apart, you will be ready for this one final statement about that world, the most dreadful statement I can make. The energy necessary to move the assemblage points of sorcerers comes from the realm of inorganic beings. This is the truth and the legacy of the old sorcerers to us. The inorganic beings have us pinned down to this day. This is the reason I don't like them. I resent having to dip into to one source alone. Personally, I refuse to do it, and I'm trying to steer you away from it. We can't have dealings with them, and yet we can't stay away from them. My solution has been to take their energy but not give in to their influence. This is known as the ultimate stalking. It is done by sustaining the unbending intent of freedom, even though no sorcerer knows what freedom really is. The reason sorcerers have to take energy from the realm of inorganic beings is because there is no other viable energy for sorcerers. In order to maneuver the assemblage point in the manner they do, sorcerers need an inordinate amount of energy. As I said, a redeployment of energy is necessary in order to do dreaming. To start dreaming, sorcerers need to redefine their premises and save their energy. But that redefining is valid only to have the necessary energy to set up dreaming, to fly into other realms, to see energy, to forge the energy body, etc., etc., is another matter. For those maneuvers, sorcerers need loads of dark alien energy. They take it from the inorganic being's world by the mere act of going to that world. All the sorcerers of our line have to do this. Awareness is an endless area of exploration for sorcerers and man in general. In order to enhance awareness, there is no risk we should not run, no means we should refuse. Bear in mind, however, that only in soundness of mind can awareness be enhanced. I'm going to propose a line of action for you. It's the last task of the third gate of dreaming, and it consists of stalking the stalkers, a most mysterious maneuver. To stalk the stalkers means to deliberately draw energy from the inorganic being's realm in order to perform a sorcery feat, a journey that uses awareness as an element of the environment. In the world of daily life, water is an element of the environment that we use for traveling. Imagine awareness being a similar element that can be used for traveling. Through the medium of awareness, sorcerers from all over the universe come to us, and vice versa. Via awareness, sorcerers go to the ends of the universe. Awareness is an energetic element. You have to make that distinction. For sorcerers who see, awareness is a glow. They can hitch their energy body to that glow and go with it. The difference between a physical and an energetic element is that physical elements are part of our interpretation system, and energetic elements are not. Energetic elements, like awareness, exist in our universe, but we, as average people, perceive only the physical elements because we were taught to do so. Sorcerers perceive the energetic elements for the same reason. They were taught to do so. The use of awareness as an energetic element of our environment is the essence of sorcery. In terms of practicalities, the trajectory of sorcery is first to free the existing energy in us by impeccably following the sorcerer's path, second, to use that energy to develop the energy body by means of dreaming, and third, to use awareness as an element of the environment in order to enter with the energy body and all our physicality into other worlds. There are two kinds of energy journeys into other worlds. One is when awareness picks up the sorcerer's energy body and takes it wherever it may, and the other is when the sorcerer decides in full consciousness to use the avenue of awareness to make a journey. It takes an enormous discipline to do the second. In the life of sorcerers, there are issues that require masterful handling, and dealing with awareness as an energetic element open to the energy body is the most important, vital, and dangerous of those issues. With enough energy, you can perform the last task of the third gate of dreaming, to break the boundaries of the normal world and, using awareness as an energetic element, enter into another. This breaking and entering amounts to stalking the stalkers. Using awareness as an element of the environment bypasses the influence of the inorganic beings, but it still uses their energy. In a pinch, your energy body is perfectly capable of taking care of itself. After getting into a state of total inner silence, slip gently into dreaming, voicing your intent to go to the realm of the inorganic beings. Once you're in the world of the inorganic beings, you have to voice your intent to transfer your normal awareness to your energy body. What is important is that you intend the transfer of the total awareness of your daily world to your energy body. Transferring awareness is purely a matter of voicing your intent and having the necessary amount of energy to tip the scales. This means to be able to add one's total physical mass to the energy body. Using awareness as a medium to make the journey into another world is not the result of applying any techniques, but is the corollary of intending and having enough energy to be energetically capable of pulling our physicality and placing it on the energy body in order to make that journey. In order to enter into that other world, your total physical mass has to be added to your energy body. The great difficulty of this maneuver is to discipline the energy body. Lack of discipline is the only reason you may fail in performing this feat of ultimate stocking. Sometimes, as a fluke, an average person ends up performing it and entering into another world, but this is immediately explained away as insanity or hallucination. Forget the self and you will fear nothing. During an exercise of stalking the stalkers, one realizes that perceiving is an all-inclusive act when the assemblage point has been immobilized on one position. I have told you that the power our daily world has over us is the result of the fact that our assemblage point is immobile on its habitual position. This immobility is what makes our perception of the world so inclusive and overpowering that we cannot escape from it. If you want to break this totally inclusive force, all you have to do is dispel the fog, that is to say, displace the assemblage point by intending its displacement. You yourself will understand what I mean the moment you have to bring your assemblage point to another position in order to dispel that world's fog, which will begin to swallow you during a maneuver of stalking the stalkers. The re-entry into our world is automatic if we don't let the fog set in. Ordinarily, dreamers experience the whole maneuver as a series of slow transitions, and they have to voice their intent to use awareness as an element. Ordinarily, dreamers are merely voyagers. The old sorcerer's damnation was that the inorganic beings took them to worlds from which they could not return. Since they entered into that world with all their physicality, the fixation of their assemblage points on the position pre-selected by the inorganic beings was so overpowering that it created a sort of fog that obliterated any memory of the world they came from. The natural consequence of such an immobility is that the dreamer's assemblage point cannot return to its habitual position. Think about this. Perhaps this is exactly what has happened to all of us in the world of daily life. We are here, and the fixation of our assemblage point is so overpowering that it has made us forget where we came from and what our purpose was for coming here. The task is to sneak by the inorganic beings, not be run by them. Perhaps you will stalk the stalkers when you have the strength, or perhaps you'll never accomplish it. It doesn't really matter. If one thing doesn't work, another will. Sorcery is an endless challenge. In order to use awareness as an element of the environment, dreamers first have to make a journey to the inorganic being's realm. Then they have to use that journey as a springboard, and while they are in possession of the necessary dark energy, they have to intend to be hurled through the medium of awareness into another world. In your dreaming practices, see energy in energy-generating dreamlike states. When you are able to see everything that presents itself to you, you may become incapable of rendering intelligently what you see. It may be then as though you have reached states of perception for which you have no lexicon. Such incomprehensible and indescribable visions would be your energy body using awareness as an element not for journeying, because you wouldn't yet have enough energy, but for entering into the energy fields of inanimate matter, or of living beings. At the fourth gate of dreaming, the energy body travels to specific concrete places. There are three ways of using the fourth gate. One, to travel to concrete places in this world. Two, to travel to concrete places out of this world. And three, to travel to places that exist only in the intent of others. Whether or not you can cross the fourth gate by yourself is up to the spirit. Modern-day sorcerers have realized that only if they remain totally detached can they have the energy to be free. Theirs is a peculiar type of detachment, which is born not out of fear or indolence, but out of conviction. Stretch your arms in front of you, to the sides, and then behind you. It relaxes the body. For modern-day sorcerers, to perceive energy directly is a matter of personal attainment. We maneuver the assemblage point through self-discipline. Your energy body has endless resources. Modern-day sorcerers do not know the details of the thousands of possible positions of the assemblage point. By details, I mean particular ways of treating the energy body in order to maintain the assemblage point fixed on specific positions. Most of the shifts modern-day sorcerers experience are mild shifts within a thin bundle of energetic luminous filaments inside the luminous egg, a bundle called the band of man, or the purely human aspect of the universe's energy. Beyond that band, but still within the luminous egg, lies the realm of the grand shifts. When the assemblage point shifts to any spot on that area, perception is still comprehensible to us, but extremely detailed procedures are required for perception to be total. Every grand shift has different inner workings, which modern sorcerers could learn if they knew how to fixate the assemblage point long enough at any grand shift. By inducing a systematic displacement of the assemblage point, dreaming liberates perception, enlarging the scope of what can be perceived.